or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Jim Michaeli, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from recent issues of the Jamestown Post-Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Let's take a look at the front page first. Here's a story titled, Floating Stage Creating Issues in Celeron. It's by John Whitaker. 4 years ago, the Floating Stage in Bemis Point hosted its final concert. The end of the Chautauqua Lake Pops concert in Mayville, previously held as the Bemis Point Pops in Bemis Point, meant the floating stage upon which concerts were held no longer had a home. The stage had already been moved from Bemis Point to Mayville. From Mayville, the stage ended up behind Holiday Harbor in Celeron. And now the stage is becoming a slight problem for Celeron's code of enforcement officials. During a May Celeron Village Board meeting, Alan Gustafson, Village Code Enforcement Officer, said there have been issues with structures being built on the former floating stage. Gustafson said he and Scott Schregenrost, Celeron Mayor, have reached out to the State Department of Environmental Conservation and other state agencies regarding safety concerns. Village board members are also advertising for proposals for the former Chautauqua Lake Auto property. Schregenrost asked board members to identify types of businesses that they would like to see on the parcel. Chautauqua County lawmakers approved transferring the 12 Melvin Avenue lot to the Celeron Village Board for $2,000 plus a share of any potential redevelopment sale proceeds in 2023. The property was described by county officials as being in deplorable condition prior to the demolition of the garage and office building on the site. Village officials also cleared old cars from the lot. The county could have sold the property at a tax auction, but the village board wanted to buy the property to clear the lot and redevelop it. At the time, there was a person interested in developing the lot, but that unnamed project fell through, prompting the village to take action in May to advertise the property. Village officials have approved a request from Adam Howard to create a walking entrance from Lucille Ball Memorial Park to the Ready About Sailing Ship Store. The village isn't providing any assistance or funding for the project, but unanimously approved Howard's plan as long as Howard pays all expenses to remove fencing and install a gate, create a stone walkway, obtain a building permit, and provide a certificate of insurance naming the village of Celeron as an additional insured and certificate holder. The gate will be locked when the store is closed. In other business, the village is continuing to negotiate with the Jamestown Board of Public Utilities on a new water contract. Celeron residents pay a 50% premium above what Jamestown residents pay. The Board of Public Utilities is seeking to double that premium, Schregenrost said in a recent newsletter to village residents, that would result in village residents paying twice as much as Jamestown residents. This piece is titled Symbol of Pride. The new playground in the town of Clymers Town Park was officially installed over the weekend, though fencing and caution tape remain up, with no one allowed on it until Tuesday. That's a caption for a photo of the new playground. Clymer. The end of last week saw the town of Clymer gathering in the town park for 3 days of construction on the town's new playground. After about a year of planning, collaboration, and countless volunteer hours, the town celebrated the completion of the new community playground Saturday afternoon with an official ribbon cutting. Built by volunteers from the community over the 3 day building period, town officials noted that the playground project was built not only for children, but for the entire Clymer community. The project also included the building and installation of a new town park sign, benches, and picnic tables. This project is about much more than playground equipment, the Clymer Town Board said. It is a reflection of what can happen when a community comes together with a shared purpose. We are grateful to every organization, business, volunteer, and resident who helped make this vision a reality. Partnerships that made the playground project possible include a partnership between the town, Kaboom, the Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Foundation, the Chautauqua Region Community Foundation, and local businesses, organizations, and volunteers. Together, all of the groups involved came with a common goal to create a place where children and families can gather, play, and make memories for years to come. Currently, fencing and caution tape remain on the playground, and according to the Clymer Town Clerk's Facebook page, no one will be allowed on the playground until that all comes down on Tuesday. The town board recognized Councilman Todd Colsty, who has spearheaded the project from the earliest stages. Since July 2025, Colsty worked tirelessly with Kaboom project partners, town staff, volunteers, and contractors to coordinate every phase of the project. The board said that his leadership, dedication, and persistence over the past year were instrumental in bringing this vision to life. The town also recognized Town Clerk Wendy Triscott, who helped to keep the project moving forward throughout the planning progress with organization, communication, and coordination. Thanks was also given to Highway Superintendent Scott Triscott and other members of the Highway Department, Stephen Enlow, Kevin Damcott, and Michael Tekolver, who gave their time to the playground with extensive site preparation, equipment operation, and behind-the-scenes work, helping to create the foundation that allowed the community build to be successful. The full list of partners for the project, including foundations, community and local businesses, and construction partners, include Kaboom, Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Foundation, Chautauqua Region Community Foundation, The Dutch Village Restaurant, Necker's Company General Store, Jamestown Macadam, Clymer Central School, along with Superintendent Beth Olson, who helped to host the design day, Eastern States Metal Roofing, Clymer Hardware and Home Center, Lickitus Oil and Propane, Jacob Rockwell and Bicky Rudd from Kaboom, Dave Mason and Lucas Prutch from Parkitects, Groundbreaking Solutions, and New Ground Builders. The town also recognized the many volunteers who came to help work behind the scenes to bring the playground project to fruition, including Sonia Shampoo, Kathy Crowell, Julie King, Valerie Beckerink, Cindy Willink, Jeanne Hoons, and Claudia Bemis, who coordinated volunteers, organized meals, welcomed participants, and kept the project running smoothly throughout the build. Additionally, the town thanked those who donated tools, equipment, meals, supplies, and other resources, including Bill and Jeff Rice, Jeff Bemis, Sue Quereveld, SHAC at Clymer Central School, and the many additional businesses and community members. While the building days took place last weekend, other aspects of the work have been happening throughout the past year, including a design day for Clymer children, giving them the option to be in charge of what the final design looked like. One of the most unique aspects of the project began long before construction started, the town board said. During a design day at Clymer Central School, local students worked alongside Kaboom to imagine what they wanted their playground to become. Their ideas helped shape the final design, ensuring the finished playground reflects the creativity and spirit of the children who will enjoy it. The town board expressed their gratitude to everyone who helped come support the playground project over the time period, including the many organizations and businesses, and every volunteer who contributed their time. The board noted that whether it was 3 full days on the build site, or simply stopping by to lend a hand, every contribution mattered. This playground stands as a lasting reminder of what can be accomplished when neighbors work together for the benefit of future generations, the town board said. The new playground is more than a place to play. It is a symbol of community pride, partnership, and a shared investment in Clymer's future. The town board looks forward to seeing generations of children enjoy the space for many years to come. Legislature to again take up job creation resolution. Mayville. Fred Larson is continuing his push to make job creation the number one goal of the Chautauqua County Legislature. Larson, a Democrat from Jamestown, pre-filed a resolution for Wednesday night's Chautauqua County Legislature meeting entitled, Declaring Job Creation the Number One Economic Development Goal. The resolution was not reviewed by any of the legislature committees in June and was sent to committee for review for a possible vote next month. During the discussion, Larson said he felt the resolution was simple enough to not need to be reviewed in committee. He read the entire resolution, which has only 4 whereas clauses and 2 resolved clauses. In it, the resolution notes jobs lost at Bush Industries, Serta Mattress, Truck Light, Monofrax, Carriage House, and Petrie Baking totaled around 1,500 positions. The resolution also states that Chautauqua County has lost more population since the 2010 census, at the highest rate of any Western New York county. The resolution, which has not been passed, states that the county is declaring job creation as the number one goal and calls for government grants, payment in lieu of tax agreements, pilots, exemptions from sales taxes and mortgage taxes, low interest loans and taxpayer-funded infrastructure improvements be directed at private investment that will create jobs for our residents. Last year, when the county legislature set goals and objectives for the county planning department, Larson wanted to have job creation listed as the number one goal. His proposal was rejected. A month later, fellow Democratic legislator Bob Bankowski of Dunkirk introduced a resolution titled Declaring Job Growth as the Number One Goal of County Economic Development Efforts for 2026 through 2029. Before a vote was held on that resolution, Republicans introduced a substitute resolution. That modified resolution stated the County Industrial Development Agency and the county legislature, quote, will continue to make job creation and retention by businesses a top priority, with the understanding that the CCIDA, not the county's Department of Planning and Development, has the tools and resources and is uniquely qualified to fulfill this objective, unquote. On Wednesday, Larson said he did not want to see his resolution sent to committee, arguing that Republicans will water it down like they did with Bankowski's resolution. I just don't understand what the Republican Economic Development Committee is going to do other than take my simple declarative resolution containing only facts and turn it into another 2026 monstrosity that's filled with excuses and misleading information, and refusing to have this government go on record as making the addition of new employment, new jobs, new companies, our number one economic development priority, he said. The legislature's Planning and Economic Development Committee has four Republicans on it and one Democrat. Larson was previously a member of the committee, but was reassigned at the beginning of the year. Larson implied he was upset about his committee reassignment when he was invited to attend the July Planning and Economic Development Committee meeting to discuss his resolution. I won't be attending a committee that I served on about six or seven times under Republican chairmen, going back to 86, that I no longer serve on, he said. Still, legislator Bob Scudder, Republican from Fredonia, noted the resolution introduced by Larson is not an emergency and should be reviewed before a final vote. That's our general way of proceeding. We've sent other resolutions to committee that haven't come through here, he said. Larson admitted that if it does go to committee, it will bring further attention to the issue. I should be happy to have you send it to committee because the newspaper and the radio can talk about it, this issue in July as well as June. That suits my purposes, he said, adding, but I'd rather this body acknowledge that our people, our young families, the 230 people that lost their jobs at Bush a month or so ago, a certain percentage of them are going to leave this community. The vote to send the resolution to committee passed along partisan lines, with the 12 Republican legislators voting in favor and the 7 Democrats voting no. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Jamestown Post-Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Judges to be required to visit jails. The story is accompanied by a photo of a smiling judge sitting in court. It says, it's captioned, New York Chief Judge Rowan Wilson is pictured in 2023 during his swearing-in ceremony. The story is by John Whitaker. Judges serving in criminal and family courts will be required to visit a prison, jail, or other detention starting in January 2028. The rule was announced recently by the state unified court system under rules being implemented by Judge Rowan Masters, the state's chief judge. The rule would make New York the first state in the nation to mandate immersive yearly visits by all trial court judges responsible for sentencing or detention decisions. This rule keeps judges better connected to what transpires after sentencing. It deepens a judge's first-hand understanding of prison conditions and the broad impact of incarceration on individuals, families, and communities, as well as the opportunities available during incarceration, said Chief Judge Rowan D. Wilson. The revised rule embodies the principle that judges are not distant arbiters, but engaged stewards of justice, whose thoughtful determinations are grounded in reality. By doing so, it promotes confidence in the judiciary, not merely in those who are incarcerated or their families, but also in the public at large. Justice may be depicted as blind, but should not blind itself to reality. Under the new Part 17, judicial visits to facilities will include opportunities for meaningful time in key areas such as intake, housing, work education, recreation, visitation, dining, and medical and mental health facilities. Judges will also have an opportunity to meet with incarcerated individuals, employees, administrators, and service providers. Additionally, visits will rotate among facility types, including state prisons, local jails, and youth and women's facilities, in accordance with judicial assignments, as delineated in the amended rules, and, to the extent practicable, across regions of the state. The new Part 17 seeks to create an impactful program of engagement between judges and incarcerated individuals, as well as the employees, administrators, and service providers working in New York's jails and prisons, said Joseph A. Zayas, State Chief Administrative Judge. Through consistent immersive visits, judges will be kept abreast of facility conditions and challenges, and in turn, promote transparency and public trust in our courts and criminal justice system. The proposal for a new Part 17 was circulated for public comment in September of 2025. Nearly 150 comments were received from a wide variety of individuals and organizations, including present and former judges, medical professionals, academics, current and formerly incarcerated individuals, and organizations advocating for them, defense counsel, prosecutors, other practicing attorneys, correctional facility professionals, clergy, social work and mental health professionals, and international experts. The Administrative Board of the Courts, which comprises Wilson and the four presiding justices of the New York State Supreme Court's Appellate Division, approved the amendments to Part 17 in May 2026, which were then approved by the Court of Appeals and promulgated. The new Part 17 will take effect January 1st, 2028, to allow sufficient time for successful implementation, which will include a new judicial orientation and education program and significant logistical planning. The court system will establish an advisory task force, bringing together trial court judges, judicial associations, court administrators, correctional and detention facility representatives, and experts from relevant fields related to corrections and the rights of incarcerated persons. Here's an editorial on the opinion page. It's titled, Government Purchase of Lakefront Property in Mayville Raises Questions. There doesn't seem to be much commercial interest in land on the shores of Chautauqua Lake in Mayville, where a controversial condominium project was once planned. That isn't necessarily a bad thing for Mayville residents, who fought the condo project tooth and nail over the course of years before the project fell apart. For now, the open views of Chautauqua Lake are preserved. Mayville Mayor Rick Siper has approached the Mayville Village Board about possibly purchasing the parcel. The 1.2-acre parcel is currently owned by Erie Bank and being advertised as suitable for commercial development, housing development, a mixed-use building, or a waterfront restaurant or hotel. The price tag is $695,000. Tom Carlson, a member of the Chautauqua Town Board, has said the town may be interested in helping purchase the property if the price is right and if the village will add the 1.2 acres to Lakeside Park. Siper said during a recent village board meeting that the village should consider talking to the realtor and then include possible plans for the property as part of a future NY Forward grant application. One idea is to have microbusinesses on the property operating out of small sheds that sit on a trail. The idea of Mayville or Chautauqua purchasing the lakefront property isn't necessarily a bad outcome, but could there be better outcomes out there that don't take the property off the tax rolls? For example, Cypress' microbusiness idea would be better, in our opinion, if it was being proposed by an entity that wanted to purchase the property so that it remained a tax-paying entity with a use that most Mayville residents support. If expansion of Lakeside Park is the best use of the property, there should at least be discussion before spending taxpayer money on how the land purchase and its future use will benefit Mayville residents other than simply preserving what we admit is a breathtaking view of Chautauqua Lake coming down Route 394. The time to have those talks is before a purchase, not after. Stiper's proposal isn't necessarily a bad one, but it's important to consider it from all angles before spending taxpayers' money. Also on the opinion page, here's a column by Jeff Robbins titled Shambles, America Surrenders Unconditionally. There was a time when lying all the time was frowned upon, and when easily demonstrable lying all the time could get a fellow into trouble. If President Donald Trump has succeeded at anything, it is in proving that those days are over. Pathological, even felonious lying did not impede his 2024 election and does not appear to have shaken his hold on his considerable base. The quaint idea that presidents were supposed to model decent, honest conduct lies in a shambles. That isn't the only thing in a shambles, as the release, finally, of the Memorandum of Understanding between the United States and Iran that Trump kept secret for days has made clear. America's credibility, our allies' willingness to rely on a word we say, and the expectation that an American president could be counted upon to enhance our national security rather than jeopardize it, are also in tatters. This is the result of a schizophrenic, panicked reversal of course by Trump, who, after months of boasting that he had stopped Iran's march toward nuclear weapons and obliterated its ability to threaten the Middle East, capitulated abjectly to Tehran, inking a deal which, while highlighting that he had done nothing of the sort, handed Iran thousands, hundreds of billions of dollars with which to continue doing what it has been doing for decades, only more so. Unconditional surrender is what Trump, with typical dishonesty, proclaimed he had obtained from Iran. But the only unconditional surrender to be found was ours. It fell to our Secretary of State, patently uncomfortable being associated with Trump's capitulation, to describe the regime to which we had capitulated. Every single problem in the Middle East traces straight back to Iran, Marco Rubio said on a tarmac last week. Hezbollah, Iran. Shia militias destroying and threatening Iraq, Iran. Hamas, Iran. The Houthis, Iran. Assad slaughtering people in Syria, Iran. He might have added, the occupation and subjugation of Lebanon, Iran. The threats against our Gulf allies, Iran. The terms, so-called, of the humiliating document signed by Trump after months of threatening to obliterate Iran, or proclaiming fraudulently that he had already done so, were a stomach-turning display of national ignominy. There are no limits on Iran's ability to continue enriching uranium, putatively the principal rationale for the war in the first place. To punctuate the point, Iran's president publicly confirmed that it would enrich uranium as it pleased. There are no restrictions on Iran's ability to expand its ballistic missile capacity as it wishes, to fund genocidal enterprises like Hamas and Hezbollah, and to continue occupying Lebanon as it sees fit. And as an incomprehensible reward to Iran for entering into a deal which gives Iran everything it wanted and everyone else nothing, the United States agrees to provide Iran with tens of billions of dollars of sanctions relief and a $300 billion investment fund. The Democrats, naturally, seized the opportunity to do a 180-degree reversal of their own. Democrats who derided warnings about Iran as the warmongering of forever warriors and the nefarious AIPAC lobby, New York Mayor Zoran Mamdani experimented with Nuremberg-style rhetoric, labeling Americans who supported the American-Israeli relationship monsters, camped out in front of television cameras to express their horror at how much Trump gave Iran in return for the goose egg. America got in return. They're right to be horrified, but their newfound horror at the coddling of Iran would sound better coming from mouths that had not spent the last several years urging that Iran be coddled. I love this deal, Bill Maher quipped last week. We got everything we wanted except for everything we asked for. We're left thoroughly humiliated, our national security and the world economy permanently threatened, an Iranian population that deserves better consigned to continued brutalization, an Iranian regime justifiably giddy that the United States is too feckless to do anything but tweet impotently, and that it can do what it wants without consequences. And that surely will include obtaining nuclear weapons. So much winning, as the president says. The author of that piece, Jeff Robbins, his latest book is titled Notes from the Brink, a collection of columns about policy at home and abroad. Robbins is a former assistant United States attorney and a United States delegate to the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva. He was chief counsel for the minority of the United States Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. An attorney specializing in the First Amendment and a longtime columnist, he writes on politics, national security, human rights, and the Middle East. Thule Lodge holds Swedish midsummer meal with music. Falconer, the Thule Lodge held its Swedish midsummer meal with dancing and music at the Three Seas Falcon's Nest restaurant in Falconer. The evening's event was opened with a welcome from Lodge Chairman Scott Axelson. A variety of food was available to all, including Swedish meatballs, potatoes, rice pudding, shrimp, cucumber salad, limpa bread, and strawberry torte. Ample amounts of food was catered by the Three Seas. The blessing prior to the meal was given by Lodge Chaplain Bonnie Larkin. Following the meal, the Swedish folk dancers, dressed in Swedish costumes, gave a performance of several different dances. Music was provided by Kathy Peterson and Cheryl Rich, playing violins, and Don Sandy playing his accordion. A wonderful performance was enjoyed. After the dance performance, a brief business meeting was held by Axelson. Past Lodge Secretary John Sipos led all in the pledge, explaining that Leif Erikson had landed in North America in about the year 1000. Lodge Secretary Jeff Crosley read the minutes of the previous meeting, and Lodge Treasurer Loretta Smith gave the financial report of the Lodge. Social Chairman and Cultural Leader Lynn Myers gave a message about Swedish events. The Daily Award was presented to Brenda Nelson. The 23rd Annual Scandinavian Folk Festival will be held on Saturday, July 18th and Sunday, July 19th at the Northwest Arena in Jamestown. Don Sandy gave an overview of the many events to take place at the Lodge. Thule Lodge was formed 119 years ago in Jamestown to help the Swedish immigrants with housing, employment, and schooling. Many of the Swedish people found employment in the many furniture factories once in Jamestown. Thule Lodge always welcomes new members. Today, Thule exists to preserve Swedish history and heritage through events and activities. Here's an obituary for Nadine A. Nitopsky. Nadine lived from 1989 to 2026. Nadine A. Nitopsky passed away peacefully on Sunday, June 21st, 2026, after years of living with several health conditions. She was born on October 30th, 1989, in Jamestown, New York, and was raised in Casadega, New York. Nadine graduated from CVCS in 2007. After completing college, she moved to Brevard, North Carolina, where she began her career with Friday Staffing as a recruiter. She found great fulfillment in connecting people with the right job opportunities at the right time. She later joined Gaia Herbs, where her love of plants truly flourished, both in her work and in the lush indoor jungle she lovingly cultivated at home. Nadine also found joy in the outdoors. She especially loved hiking to waterfalls and spending warm summer days gently tubing down calm rivers. She was preceded in death by her husband, Jesse Shelton. She was survived by her father, John Nitopsky, her mother, Karen Palmquist, her sister, Anna Luli, her half-sister, Ava Palmquist, her stepfather, Kevin Palmquist, her sister-in-law, Holly Shelton, and mother-in-law, Tammy Shelton. She is also survived by many aunts, uncles, grandparents, cousins, niece and nephew, and she shared a particularly close bond with her cousin, Sarah Hatch. No public services will be held, as her family will be grieving privately. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made in Nadine's honor toward the planting of a tree in her memory. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Jamestown Post-Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Here's a story titled Celebrating Service. At the top of the story, there's a picture of a smiling group of five people standing under an American flag. The caption says, "The family of the late Joseph H. Mason are pictured here with Teresa Bickhart, second from right, and United Way Executive Director Amy Roller at Wright during United Way of Chautauqua County's Salute to Labor Dinner last year. Bickhardt accepted United Way's 2025 Joseph H. Mason Award, honoring her husband, the late James S. Jim Bickhardt. From left are Matt D'Angelo, Debbie D'Angelo, and Chuck D'Angelo. United Way of Chautauqua County has opened nominations for the 2026 Joseph H. Mason Award. Nominations are now being accepted by United Way of Chautauqua County for the 2026 Joseph H. Mason Award, an annual honor recognizing a local union member, active or retired, who demonstrates exceptional commitment to community service. Now in its 45th year, the award pays tribute to the late Joe Mason, a revered labor leader and United Way board member, whose legacy of service and advocacy lives on through this recognition. For this award, United Way partners with organized labor each year to select one of its own to be recognized. Nominations are open to any active or retired union member from anywhere in Chautauqua County who has made a significant impact through volunteerism. Nominees may be involved with United Way initiatives and partner agencies, or contribute to the community through other meaningful forms of service. For 45 years, this award has told the story of personal service that doesn't always make headlines, said Amy Roller, UWCHQ Executive Director. It's the story of union members who finish a shift and then show up for their neighbors, which is truly what makes a community thrive. Joseph Mason understood that strong unions and strong communities are built the same way, by people willing to do the work. Every year, the nominations we receive prove his legacy is alive in every corner of Chautauqua County. Completed nomination forms must reach United Way by Tuesday, September 1st, 2026. The United Way Labor Committee and past award recipients will review nominations in September, and the honoree will be recognized at United Way's annual Salute to Labor Gala Dinner, which will be held on Wednesday, October 21st, at 6 p.m. at the Athenaeum Hotel on the grounds of Chautauqua Institution. Mason served as the directing business representative of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, District 65, and was a staunch champion for working people throughout southwestern New York and northwestern Pennsylvania. His deep commitment to both organized labor and the United Way campaign laid the foundation for a partnership that continues today, and his family remains actively involved in the community and in organized labor. Previous honorees include union members from a wide array of sectors, including public service, trades, education, and law enforcement. The 2025 award was presented posthumously to the late James S. Jim Bickhardt of Dunkirk, a towering figure in labor and civic leadership, whose involvement stretched from the shop floor to the halls of labor governance. Bickhardt began his career with Allegheny Ludlum Corporation in 1967, rising through the ranks of United Steelworkers Local 2693, and later serving as International Staff Representative for USWA District 4, while building an extensive record of service on local boards and community organizations. The award was accepted by Teresa Bickhardt, his wife of more than 56 years, and his longtime partner in causes close to their hearts. Bickhardt's recognition marked two firsts in the award's history. He was the first honoree from Northern Chautauqua County and the first associated with the United Steelworkers of America. His selection reflects the award's countywide reach, and United Way encourages nominations from every corner of Chautauqua County and every sector of organized labor. Nomination forms are available to download online at www.unitedwaychq.org. Completed forms can be mailed to 208 Pine Street, Jamestown, New York, 14701. CAP cadets tour Martz Cole Observatory. Cadets of the Jamestown Civil Air Patrol Composition Squadron recently toured the Martz Cole Observatory. The cadets had the chance to learn about the history of the observatory, dating back to the original observatory built on the grounds. Then the cadets split into two groups so everyone could have a closer look at the equipment. Volunteers from the Marshall Martz Memorial Astronomical Association demonstrated how the telescopes moved. the different parts and their function, and how the telescope is able to take deep spacing imaging. The observatory has two large domes in addition to a roll-off roof enclosure that houses telescopes available for member use. The March Dome houses a 24-foot Dahl Kirkman telescope with a 16-foot Ritchie Cretian wide field telescope attached to it. These are fully autonomous scopes that can be remotely controlled from the observatory control room and off-site. They are used for imaging deep sky objects as well as asteroids, comets, and the moon. The Cole Dome houses a 20-inch classical Cassegrain telescope and a 5-inch Takahashi refractor. A Dobsonian 13-inch telescope is housed under the roll-off roof among several other telescopes of various designs and features, including 8-inch and 12-inch Schmidt-Cassegrain catadioptric telescopes, all of which can be set up quickly for the enjoyment of visitors. Cadets also were able to see the radio room and to talk with volunteers regarding the equipment and its usage, even the ability to communicate with the International Space Station. The evening ended with a presentation of the different images that have been taken by the telescopes throughout the years. The March Cole Observatory is managed by the Marshall Martz Memorial Astronomical Association, Incorporated, which is a nonprofit organization of amateur astronomers. Let's take a look at some local events and meetings coming up. It's a column called Briefly. Dino Pal series begins July 1st at Prendergast Library. Prendergast Library offers fun, free educational programming for all ages. Every Wednesday from July 1 to August 19th, the library will be offering the Dino Pals series. Enjoy a dino-themed crafts featuring new species and facts every week. No registration is needed for this free program. It's held on the lawn from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. as weather permits. Lego at Prendergast Library returns July 3rd. Every Friday in July at 9:30 a.m., Prendergast Library will be offering Early Birds Lego. Enjoy summertime Lego fun, building famous works of art, and beautiful flowers using the library's new Lego kits. The program is supported by grant funds from the Cummins Foundation. To learn more, call the information desk at 716-484-7135, extension 226, or you can visit prendergastlibrary.org. Summer movie series at Prendergast Library begins July 3rd. The James Prendergast Library will offer its summer movie series Fridays in July from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. The series follows the library's summer reading program, Dinosaur Theme. Movies include Ice Age on July 3rd, Ice Age 2 on July 10th, Ice Age Dawn of the Dinosaurs on July 17th, Ice Age Continental Drift on July 24th, and Ice Age Collision Course on July 31st. There is no cost to attend this program, which will be held in the library's fireplace room. For more information, call the library's information desk at 716-484-7135, extension 2226, or visit prendergastlibrary.org to view the library's program calendar. The library is open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. weekdays and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday. Audubon to host First Sunday Storytime, July 5th. The Audubon Community Nature Center's next First Sunday Storytime for 2 to 8-year-olds and their adults is on July 5th. Doors will open at 12:20 p.m. for the 12:30 to 1 p.m. event. The building is fully open at 1 p.m. The program and building admission are both free. After story time, those attending can check out the Audubon's animals, books, puzzles, games, and more, explore the indoor nature play area, live animals, and exhibits. The Birds of Prey Trail's outdoor nature play area are also available. Reservations for story time are requested by Saturday, July 4th by calling 716-569-2345 or go to audubonCNC.org. Participation is limited to 15. Walk-ins will be welcome if there is room. And finally, the Prendergast Library Board of Trustees meeting is scheduled for July 6th. The Prendergast Library's next Board of Trustees meeting will be held at the library on Monday, July 6th at 5:15 p.m. Board meetings are open to the public. Here's a story titled, Wandel Offers Fredonia Water Meeting Updates. Trustee Paul Wandel offered a news-filled report at the latest Fredonia Board of Trustees meeting, topped by talk about water. Wandel said that on May 13th, he and water treatment plant supervisor Louis Fred visited the plant and reservoir to investigate any concerns. Luis and I did a walkthrough in the plant and toured the reservoir, including the access road. The access road is compromised with fallen trees and winds that have wiped out sections of the overhead power lines. Luis has quotes from BECC Electric to remove overhead lines and replace them with below ground lines. Power interruption is an ongoing problem here. The village needs to follow through with this plan to replace the lines and consider expenses in the new 2027 budget. An emphasis was placed on new chlorinator project work. Overall, the new chlorinator system is functional and 6 points. One, Luis had some concerns on the construction work and engineering design. I contacted to initiate discussion and resolve the issues. Two, overall, I was impressed to see a new and reliable chlorinator system, which should have been installed many years ago. Three, we are now using a state-of-the-art system that has thus far delivered steady liquid chlorination. Four, chlorination breakdown is the primary source and reason for Fredonia water boil advisories. The process is a success and a testament to how we can achieve real-time solutions for our water reliability issues instead of simply applying Band-Aids as in the past. Six, suggested improvements to our process automation system are still ongoing. Wandel also mentioned a Friday, May 22nd joint water meeting with North County Water District and Town of Pomfret, Chautauqua County Legislator Bob Scudder, Chautauqua County Department of Health, Labella Engineering, and Trustee Paul Wandel at the SUNY Fredonia Incubator Conference Center on Central Avenue in Dunkirk. Spring of 2028, expected start of construction. Review of the proposed NCWD contract, village to complete. On that note, I'm meeting with the mayor this week. I believe it's Thursday on that. Wandel attended another meeting about the village water project 6 days later, calling it a Teams meeting with Labella. Then there was a June 17th Water Committee joint meeting with NCWD, Chautauqua County Department of Health, Mayor Michael Ferguson, and myself. Updates were provided from the village and the NCWD. Wandel went on Wednesday, June 17th, Labella meeting at Village Water Treatment Plant. Present at the plant were Supervisor Luis Fred, Matt Higgins from Labella, and myself. The objective was to review any outstanding issues and concerns from the chlorinator upgrade project. Wandel also mentioned a June 18th meeting with Department of Public Works Supervisor Doug Bunge, where stormwater drainage work and water main leaks were mentioned. He said a 10-inch line in Main Street near the site of a huge break in January is leaking. In addition, a main on Chestnut and Risley Streets is also slowly leaking, and several isolation valves are either non-operational or they leak when operated. These issues underscore the need for a major water main replacement project, Wandel said. He concluded by saying that Bunge, like Marsh, will also be brought back as a consultant. Bunge retired just days after his meeting with Wandel. We're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Jamestown Post-Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Here's another death notice. It's for Robert W. Blackman. Mr. Blackman lived from 1922 to 2026. Robert W. Blackman, 103, formerly of 38 Van Buren Street, died Saturday, June 27th, 2026, in Heritage Green Rehab and Skilled Nursing. He was born August 10th, 1922, in Casadega, a son of the late F.R. Blackman and Alma Meller Blackman. He was a World War II veteran of the U.S. Army Air Corps. For many years, he worked for Millcraft Paper as a truck driver, and later for Upstate Milk. His memberships included Moose Lodge, Vikings, Lakewood Rod and Gun Club, and Lake Erie Salmon and Trout Association. Surviving are two children, Sharon, who's married to Richard Borak, and William Blackman, both of Jamestown. Grandchildren, Jennifer Van Nauker of Jamestown, Robert Borak of Cape Coral, Florida, Caitlin, married to Jason Hill Blackman of Maine, and Christine Blackman of Virginia, and great-grandchildren Maddox Hill, Ford Hill, and Daniel Van Nauker. Besides his parents, he was preceded in death by his wife, Lois Johnson Blackman, whom he married October 5, 1947, and who died January 26, 2022, and a son, John Blackman. The funeral will be held at 2:30 p.m. Wednesday in the Lind Funeral Home, where friends will be received for 30 minutes prior to the service. Burial will be in Stockton Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to disabled American veterans. You may leave words of condolence at lindfuneralhome.com. Here's a story titled, Gillibrand and Others Push to Cap Medicare Costs. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat from New York, ranking member of the Senate Aging Committee, along with 14 of her Senate colleagues, introduced the Medicare Cost Cap Act to create a $5,000 cap on out-of-pocket costs for traditional Medicare Parts A and B beneficiaries. Currently, traditional Medicare does not have a limit on out-of-pocket costs, meaning beneficiaries are confronted with unlimited, catastrophic health care costs if they face serious illness or hospitalization. Medicare Advantage, MA, employer-sponsored insurance, and insurance bought on the marketplace all have annual caps on out-of-pocket spending. An out-of-pocket cap would level the playing field between traditional Medicare and MA and guarantee that all people with Medicare are protected, no matter what coverage option they choose. The legislation also enhances programs that protect low-income Medicare beneficiaries, shielding seniors and people with disabilities who already rely almost exclusively on their Social Security benefits from rising premiums and out-of-pocket costs. Under the Trump administration's watch, Medicare Part B premiums exceeded $200 for the first time last year. Under President Trump, seniors are being forced to choose between paying for life-saving care and simply being able to afford a life, said Gillibrand. The Medicare Cost Cap Act will lower out-of-pocket costs for seniors with Medicare and ensure that no one is pushed into financial ruin by a single health emergency. I am proud to introduce this important legislation, and I will continue fighting to expand access to quality and affordable care for our seniors. In 2028, 3.2 million Medicare beneficiaries are projected to directly benefit from an out-of-pocket cost cap. Over the next 10 years, over 52% of beneficiaries are expected to exceed the proposed $5,000 cap at least once. On average, this plan would save enrollers $1,024 per year. While financial support does exist for low-income Medicare enrollees, oftentimes confusing and extensive administrative barriers prevent and discourage beneficiaries from accessing these resources. These barriers adversely affect low-income seniors who struggle to afford health care. Over 500,000 enrollees who qualify for Medicare Savings Programs, MSPs, are not enrolled, leading to missed benefits and higher out-of-pocket costs for some of the most financially insecure Americans. In addition to creating an out-of-pocket cap, the legislation will improve assistance for low-income beneficiaries, such as seniors that rely exclusively on Social Security for their income. Gillibrand continues to lead the fight to lower health care costs for seniors with Medicare. Last year, she introduced legislation to strengthen Medicare's ability to negotiate prescription drug prices and reduce out-of-pocket costs for seniors. She also demanded that the Trump administration release the next round of Medicare-negotiated drug prices, savings that Democrats fought to secure. Additionally, she champions the Capping Prescription Costs Act, which would extend the cap on annual out-of-pocket prescription drug costs to people with private health insurance. Here's the horoscopes. Aries, which is March 21st through April 19th. You give in ways both visible and invisible. The invisible ways often take more effort. It's normal to want to be seen and appreciated for those efforts. Mercury retrograde asks, who takes care of whom? Is the arrangement fair? Taurus, April 20th through May 20th. Not everything is part of a pattern, but many things are, and that's why you're constantly noticing, searching for meaning and predicting outcomes. Mercury retrograde asks, how can I learn from the past? Why am I remembering this now? Gemini, which spans May 21st through June 21st. Ideally, home brings out the best in you. If there are ways your domestic situation depletes your energy, they'll stand out now, wanting to be fixed. Mercury retrograde asks, where do you feel most like yourself? What environments support your growth? Cancer, which is June 22nd through July 22nd. Certain traditions survive because they still serve a purpose. Others survive because no one has questioned them. Mercury retrograde asks, which customs nourish you? Which are ready for revision? Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd. There are people who know versions of you that were updated long ago, but they never got the memo. Mercury retrograde asks, what part of your identity have evolved? How would you introduce yourself now if no one knew your history? Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd. There are conversations you never finished. Some ended through circumstance, some through silence. Mercury retrograde asks, what still needs expression? What would happen if I said what I want to say? Libra, September 23rd through October 23rd. You remember the facts, but memory is never only factual. Each time you revisit an experience, you bring new understanding to it. Meaning changes with time. Mercury retrograde asks, what else might be true? What have you overlooked in the retelling? Scorpio, which covers October 24 through November 21. The people who raised you still have influence. They occupy space in your decisions. Whether you're glad about it or not, gratitude and independence can coexist. Mercury retrograde asks, which voices belong in the room? Which no longer get a vote? Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st. You don't always have the words for what you're going through at the time you're going through it. But eventually, language catches up with experience. Mercury retrograde asks, what can you name now that you could not name before? What becomes clearer when you tell the story differently? Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th. The past occurred one way, and only a time traveler could change that. But your feelings about what happened will keep changing. Distance creates perspective. Mercury retrograde asks, what did your family teach you? What did you teach yourself instead? Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th. A promise is not always forever. Some promises deserve renewal. Others deserve release. Mercury retrograde asks, what commitment still reflects your values? What are you maintaining purely out of obligation or habit? And finally, Pisces, which is February 19th through March 20th. The past is not a destination. It is a reference point. Memories inform your next steps, but they don't determine them. Mercury retrograde asks, what belongs in your future? What memory can remain behind while the lesson comes with you? Here's the Dear Annie column, titled Missing the Magic of Family Christmases. Dear Annie, my husband and I are in our 70s, and although our adult children live nearby, they rarely visit us. It is always considered more convenient for us to go to them. For years, I decorated our home from top to bottom for Christmas. I loved the trees, the lights, and the feeling that I was creating something special for our family. But now I find myself wondering why I bother. On Christmas Eve, we may see one of our children's families for 3 hours. Half the time, the adults fall asleep on the couch. Then they are well rested and ready to celebrate with the other in-laws on Christmas Day, while my husband and I are left alone. Our other child sometimes invites us over on Christmas Day, but by 5 p.m., everyone is in pajamas, the grandchildren are on their iPads, and there is barely any food. It does not feel like a celebration. It feels like any other evening. I have offered to host everyone, but our house is supposedly too small. It also seems unthinkable that the other grandparents might have to adjust their plans for once. Heaven forbid we upset the family apple cart. Last year, my husband received a generous, thoughtful gift. I received an inexpensive last-minute item they picked up so I would have something to open. They told me my real gift had been ordered, but it never arrived. I do so much for my children and grandchildren, yet I often feel dismissed and unappreciated. I tolerate it because I love my grandchildren and want to be part of their lives. Decorating used to bring me joy. Now looking at the tree only reminds me how lonely the holidays have become. Should I bother decorating this year when it no longer makes me happy? Signed, Christmas Spirit Running Low. Dear Running Low, stop decorating for an audience that is not coming. Put up what you like, a small tree, a wreath, a bowl of ornaments, or nothing at all. Christmas is not a performance, and you are not the unpaid stage crew. But your children may not understand how hurt you feel unless you tell them. Just tell them, plainly and truthfully, that you both miss being included and you would like the holidays to feel more balanced. You cannot force gratitude, but you can stop exhausting yourself while waiting for it. Decorate for yourself, not for people who nap through Christmas. Try to focus on what you are grateful for in them, and you will be surprised how they might be more appreciating. What we appreciate, appreciates. Let's look at the comic strips. Here's Blondie. Blondie and Dagwood are sitting in the living room, and Blondie says, she's looking at her tablet, it looks like, and she says, "These posts are misleading." And Dagwood says, "Oh yeah, totally fake." And she says, "If you click on any of them, you start getting bombarded with pop-up ads." He says, "I know, they should all be banned." She says, "Like this one for a cheap barbecue joint." And Dagwood says, "Hold on, they have a special on pulled pork?" And here's Hagar. Hagar is standing in the entrance to their house, and he says to Hilda, "I have an important dinner meeting with a rival Viking warlord tonight. I want you to accompany me." And Helga says, "Oh my, what should I wear?" He looks her right in the face and says, "Wear your best phony smile." And finally, Beetle Bailey, where two dogs are looking at each other, and one says, "There's nothing like a new tennis ball." The other dog says, "I prefer a bone." And then in the next panel, a third dog walks into the scene, and one dog says, "What about you, Otto?" New dog Otto says, "I like to chew on an everything bagel with lox and a schmear." You have been listening to a reading of articles and features from recent issues of the Jamestown Post-Journal. We read from the Jamestown Post-Journal every Saturday at 6 p.m. Your reader has been Jim Michaeli. Thank you for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Niagara Falls Review. At 8 o'clock, we have Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal. And at 9 o'clock, we have Sports Illustrated. Stay with us for these readings and more.
Thank you.
following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability,